Om Shanti. Good morning and welcome back. Good. Thanks for staying back a little longer. So hopefully this session will also add some more value and give you a few more insights. So what I'm going to share with you over the next 60 minutes or so is how mind can impact brain and how our thoughts impact different organ systems of our body. Until recently I mean about 30-40 years ago, until then, Western medicine, which is what most of the world seems to be following, believed that mind, which is non-material, cannot influence this material body. Okay? That's why even in today's MBBS curriculum, if you review, they do not speak much about the impact of mind on body. There is a separate branch of psychiatry that deals with the mental illnesses. That's different. But very little is taught in today's medical curriculum about the impact of mind on body. It's slowly changing, but we are not there yet. So today I'll try to summarize some of that work that has been going on for the last 30-40 years and what new discoveries have been made about mind's impact on our body. Okay? The very interesting thing when you survey the literature, when you review these discoveries, is science is coming around telling us that each one of us is more powerful than we think we are. We do create our own destiny. We do create our own state of being. We do create our own health every moment with every thought we make, every word we speak, every action we perform. It's both powerful and scary. Powerful because I can do something about myself. I am not as powerless as I thought to be, at the mercy of the forces around me. It's scary because now I alone am responsible for how I feel and what I experience. So this is a good opportunity for us to review that and become more positive, that we are definitely more powerful than we think we are, and what are some of the ways in which we can harness that power. Okay? Any questions so far? Good. So this is the key principle that I'm going to continuously reinforce with a lot of examples today. Human body is biologically endowed with all necessary infrastructure to help us grow mentally and spiritually. Whatever infrastructure is required, human body already has it. We'll explore that. So I'm going to speak about this topic of minding the body and then embodying the mind. How does mind impact the body? A few examples. And what is the mechanism with which mind impacts the body? Okay? And how do we embody or how do we utilize the power of the mind to become more healthy? So we will explore the art of meditation in a little more detail. What actually happens inside a meditating brain, we will see that today. And you must have heard Suraj Pai's classes yesterday and day before. So today, I'm going to explain the science behind whatever he shared. How exactly does it happen? When he said negative thoughts actually kill your neurons, what does it mean? Positive thoughts promote brain health, what does that mean? We will explore all those aspects. Okay? So So let's review some of the literature and some of the practical examples of how mind impacts the body. I want you to watch this short video clip about what we call as a placebo effect. So let me share what the placebo effect means. Placebo in Latin means a dummy pill. It doesn't have any medical value, but if you believe that it is medicine, then it will start working as a medicine. Belief plays a very important role. So how does belief impact? We will see that in this short video clip.
Now, you've all heard of the placebo effect before, when something with no known therapeutic value can actually make people feel better. It's a great trick our minds play on us, that by believing and expecting something to work, it actually does. But what's weird is that the strength of the effect can differ for some really strange reasons. For example, the same placebo can treat pain half as well as aspirin, while at the same time treating pain half as well as morphine. Morphine's a much more powerful painkiller, but a placebo is half as effective as both? Saying a placebo will reduce pain reduces pain, but saying that the same placebo will increase pain increases pain. Believing that a placebo will make you feel better will make you feel better. Believing that it won't has the opposite effect. Now, placebos aren't just pills. They can be creams, injections, surgeries, or drinks. You can even get placebo buttons. They don't actually do anything, but they sure as hell make you feel like you're in control. But not all placebos are equal. The effect of the placebo is bigger when the pill itself is bigger, or if you have two instead of one, or two once a day instead of one twice a day. And a capsule will usually beat a pill, and a syringe will usually beat a capsule, and anything with a big ass science machine can outperform any of them. A plain pill works worse than a branded one. A discounted pill works worse than a pricey one, and even a pill in a plain box does worse than one that's all shiny and shit. Placebos that are blue work best as downers, and placebos that are red are better as uppers. Studies have shown that people who take their meds on a regular basis are less likely to die than those that don't, even if those meds are all placebos. You can even get addicted to placebos. In one study, a group of women took placebos for more than 5 years. 40% of them suffered withdrawals afterwards. In fact, the effect of placebos can be so strong that some people want them banned from sports. But I mean, how would you even test for that? Placebos don't even seem to work from place to place. For example, in Germany, using a placebo to treat ulcers works better than anywhere else in Europe. But using a placebo that treats hypertension doesn't work nearly as well as it does for its neighbours. Now, remember that all of this is about comparing things that both have nothing medically effective in them, which goes to show that a placebo isn't about what's in it, but about the beliefs that we load onto it. Our minds create the medicine, and that is pretty freaking weird.
So let's explore a few more examples from our daily life that we can relate to. How many of you still have a family doctor? Wow. How many of you, as kids, when you fell sick and your parents took you to the doctor, as soon as the doctor started speaking with you, even before taking a single pill, you started feeling better? All of us. Yeah? So that's the classic placebo effect. That is, your belief that you are in front of an authority figure who has the power to reduce your pain, that thought itself starts reducing the pain. That good feeling that now I am in safe hands starts releasing endorphins by the brain. And endorphins are feel-good chemicals. And you start feeling better even before you start ingesting any pill. That's why any time you go to a doctor, if you do not believe in the capability of the doctor, even if they give right medicine, it won't work on you. your mom must be going, if you are from a small town, she must be visiting the local RMP doctor for all problems, and that served her purpose for more than 40 years. And now you are born in that town but brought up in a big modern city who has seen all these scans and all the possible tests. So when you fall sick, when you go back to your town, and by habit she takes you to the RMP doctor and say, what? Is this the person who is going to treat me? Even though the same person, same treatment has worked for your mom for 40 long years, it won't work for you. Because you don't believe. Now this is another classic case. So they tried to do this experiment where they wanted to check if a surgeon's behavior has any impact on the post-operative recovery of the patients. So they picked up two groups of patients in the same hospital who were set up for the surgery. And for these two groups of patients, the only difference what the experimenters asked the surgeon to do was, for the first group of people, surgeon would go to each patient before the surgery, go inside their room, sit on their bed, put his arm around the patient, introduce himself, and then say, I am the one who is going to do this surgery. So this is the amount of time it would take. Everything is going to be okay. Don't worry. That's what he did with every single patient in the first group. And in the second group of patients, what he did was, he just stood at the door of the patient's room. He introduced himself. He said, hi, I'm so and so. Tomorrow I'll be performing your surgery. Everything will be okay. Don't worry. It's just going to take this much time. And see you tomorrow in the theater. And then he left. Okay, now, complaints almost same. Surgery is also almost same. Everything else was made sure that remained same, other than this particular behavior of the surgeon. What do you think happened post-surgery? First group took 50% less painkillers. They stayed 30% less time in the hospital. If the second group stayed for 10 days, first group were discharged within 7 days. 30% reduction in stay is huge. Just with surgeon's behavior, how it impacts. That's why it is said, doctor or surgeon, they are the biggest placebos. They also recognize now. That's why there was an article that was published a few years ago in British Medical Journal, BMJ, where they encourage the doctors to spend more time with the patients and listen to them. It's fascinating. The average time a doctor spends with a patient, do you know what is the average time that has come down to? Less than 3 minutes. And what the study found was, if the doctor can spend 6 to 7 minutes, it increases the recovery rates and unnecessary complaints from the patients by more than half. This is another interesting thing, how our mind plays tricks. They actually did this experiment in MIT. So they picked up a few students, MIT or Harvard, one of those universities. These graduate students, just before exams like all of us have experienced, they have splitting headaches and all sorts of problems. So they went to these two groups of students, divided them into 50 each. For the first group of students, they said, there is a new pill which we are experimenting for headache, but it's expensive. It's going to cost about $10 a pill, but because we are experimenting, we'll give it to you for free. Will you be interested? They said, fine. Because if $10 pill is coming for free and then it's going to alleviate my pain, why not? So all 50 of them, they gave 7 pills, one per day, and then they said, come back after a week and tell us what was its impact on your headache. For the second group of people, exactly same pitch was repeated, except that they were told this pill costs only 10 cents. That costed $10, which is about 70 rupees, and this is 10 cents, which is about 7 rupees. And they gave the pills. And after a week, they came back and then they asked, What do you think was the result? How many in the first group would have got cured? How many in the second group would have got cured? First was more? Yeah, in first, about 40 people, that's 80% of them got cured. In the second group, only 20 people got cured. And the twist in the whole tale is, all of them were given placebos. It was not even a real pill. It was a dummy pill which was given to all 100. The only thing was, the experimenters tweaked their expectation. And this is exactly how all of us also live our life. If you are not feeling good and you are running high temperature, you go to a doctor, he gives you a simple Crocin, like that RMP doctor who has seen for many years these kind of complaints, you won't be happy. Because he is charging only 50 rupees. Agar ye itna achcha hota, toh 50 rupay mein treat karega. And you go to another doctor who charges you 600 rupees, writes a bunch of tests and some scans, makes you poorer by about 10,000 rupees, and then writes a 150 rupees antibiotic. Kya doctor yaar? Ek tablet khatam. And the same, because internally we have this association, cost is equal to quality. And that's what plays with our experience. If your friend gets a Tommy Hilfiger jacket that costs about 100,000 rupees, okay, it's 1 lakh jacket, and then you go to the corresponding manufacturer somewhere in Ludhiana or some other place where it is exactly the same thing, they just don't have that logo, and you purchase it for 2,000 rupees. You say, boss, I brought it from the same place except the logo. Chahiye to pehen ke dekh. No, no. Ye feeling hi alag hai. Even though it's exactly the same, he won't believe. He'll say, ye feeling hi alag hai. Because you already made up your mind. Internally, our expectations play huge, huge role in our experience. It is nothing to do with the reality. What Bhanu was mentioning, if you recall, there is reality and there is a story I create about the reality. And my experience is dependent on the story I create. That's the most beautiful and profound thing I liked about Brahma Kumaris. Nobody can change reality, can you? We can't. But what we can change is what story we are narrating ourselves about the reality. So Brahma Kumaris helped change that story. It's very simple. You go back, you are the same person. Same office, same home, same relationships. But the algorithms that you use to process whatever is happening to you, they bring the change in those algorithms. When you bring the change in those algorithms, your response changes. Stimulus is exactly the same. But when your response changes, your experience changes. Now, he is another very famous and successful cancer specialist. His name is Bernie S. Siegel. In 1970s, when he was treating cancer patients, what he found was there were some patients who were consistently getting cured of cancer. Yes, cancer is curable. There are many people who do come out of complete cancer. They call it as complete remission, and it does not even recur. The reason why we don't hear about them is because science still does not understand how can you get cured of completely of cancer. So if you die, you become a statistic. But if you are alive, you are of not much use for the research. So your stories are not spoken much. But what he observed was there is certain class of patients who were coming to him who consistently bet the odds. Either they lived much longer or they became completely cured. When he started observing, one of the things that he saw, one of the most important characteristics was these people, they had this desire to live and they were willing not to accept whatever the doctor said as the final sentence on their life or death. and he called them as exceptional cancer patients. And then he started this ECAP society. He has written a couple of books. Whoever is interested can definitely read those. They make a very good reading. One is Love, Medicine and Miracles. And the second book is Peace, Love and Healing. He talks a lot about how expectations, how repressed emotions over a long period of time in our life can cause cancer. That is one of the reasons that is accepted now. Might not be the only reason, but that is one of the reasons. Repressed emotions over a long period of time can also lead to cancer. So he shares his experience, and he also talks about how by becoming more positive, how by becoming more powerful internally with that inner resilience, we can overcome the dreaded disease like cancer. Okay? This is another interesting experiment that they did in one of the hospitals in US. What they did was, pills we understand, but can surgery also be a placebo? So they picked up three groups of patients, all more than 60 years of age, who were having joint pains. So for the first group of patients, they did proper surgery. For the second group of patients, they sutured, they opened up the knee, they just washed it internally, removed the dead cartilage, sutured it back. That's all they did. And for the third group of patients, they didn't do any of these, they just opened it and then sutured it back. For all of them, they took exactly the same time in the theater, just so that people standing outside should not know for whom which surgery is being done. Including the doctors and the nurses inside the theater, they did not know until the last minute which surgery they were supposed to perform on whom. So that complete confidentiality was maintained. And what do you think would have happened at the end of the surgery for all three groups of patients? All of them recovered. Even after 7 years after the surgery, even the third group patients did not have any issue. They did that with a small group of patients, and then the Bruce Mosley, the doctor whom you will see in the clip, he repeated this experiment and published the paper in BMJ with 120 people, and they observed the same result. So now it's a big question mark, because billions of dollars are spent in healthcare for old people, especially for their joint pains, your knee replacement surgeries and whatnot. So let's watch the clip.
The idea was to treat people in great pain. Volunteers with severe knee arthritis were gathered from around the state and divided into groups. Two groups would have a surgical procedure. The third would be given a placebo, fake surgery. They'd have a general anesthetic, be opened up, but wouldn't have any real procedure. They would merely think they had. I had to meet the surgeon.
It's very important for the patients not to know which treatment that they have. And they're always trying to look for clues. You know, they're always trying to get you to tell them. And the best way to avoid that, of course, is to not know as a doctor until the last minute which treatment they're going to have.
Each patient would receive a general anesthetic, but only two groups would have an actual procedure. Not even the surgical staff knew who was in each group until they were in the theater.
I would open the envelope in the room and I would read it, but I wouldn't announce it out loud. And then I would show it to the nurses who were working with me, and I would show it to the anesthesiologist. And nobody would ever say which of the three treatments was revealed in the envelope. We had a very elaborate ruse, if you will. I would play a videotape on the TV of a real surgery. And while I was watching the TV, I would ask for instruments and pass things back and forth and carry on conversation as if it was what I would really have done if what was happening on the TV screen was actually going on during that surgery. So we would have water splashing, we would have instruments clanking, and we would do this for the same amount of time that the actual surgery on the videotape took place, so that a patient and their family couldn't watch the clock and say, oh, we were only in the operating room for 10 minutes, so it must have been a pretend surgery.
All this acting felt a bit weird to a doctor trained in standard surgical procedures.
In the big picture, always in the back of my mind, I was thinking, good gosh, here's a patient who we're pretending to do surgery on. We're not really doing surgery. And, you know, I'm a physician and a healer after all. And is this kind of really, you know, the right thing to do? Or what have I gotten myself into?
It took 2 years for the study to be completed. Finally, it was time for Dr. Mosley to hear the truth from the patients themselves.
I would say, if you think that the surgery helped your knee, I want you to give me a thumbs up. If you think the surgery didn't help your knee, I want you to give me a thumbs down. And if you're not sure or you're kind of neutral, just hold your hand flat.
The verdict? Success. For every group, fake or genuine, sham surgery had worked. The patients who had it were astonished.
The response ranged from, you've got to be kidding me, I can't believe it, bewilderment, there must be a mistake, because they all felt so strongly that something had happened to change what was going on inside their knee.
During your training, what were you taught about the placebo effect?
Nothing. I had no clue. I went from being a skeptic to a believer. I realized that we were really on to something. There are clearly cases where we do surgeries and it's as much or more the patient's feeling about the surgery that influences the result as the actual surgery itself.
Dr. Mosley had seen patients get better purely because of what was in their minds. The pain had gone. It seemed too good to be true, and it did all happen 7 years ago. I wanted to see one of the patients who'd been in great pain before having Dr. Mosley's surgery. I wanted to know whether the placebo effect could still hold.
When I first had that pain, when I first, before that, I couldn't do a lot of things I did. Like going fishing or playing basketball or going dancing. And after that, I was able to do that.
He could. Woo. We could go dancing. He took me dancing and he could dance all night.
Can you describe what the pain was like before the operation?
Terrible. Over, I didn't think that it could be any worse.
It's emotional. Is it because you were in so much pain before?
Yes.
And what would you say it was that really cured you? Was it Dr. Mosley, or was it you and your mind?
That is kind of an intriguing question, you know, because I got to credit Dr. Mosley for doing what he did. But it was my mind that cured the problem.
That Dr. Mosley's patients had been cured by the sham operation, but I wasn't expecting it to have changed his life. I mean, he couldn't talk about the pain that he'd experienced without crying.
The same doctor, Bruce Mosley, he repeated this with 120 patients, and the results he observed were the same. And he published a paper also. If anyone of you is interested, I can share that. So it shows how powerfully our expectations or our mind can impact the body. So how does this happen? What is the mechanism with which mind impacts the body or mind impacts the matter. So that is the science what we call as psychoneuroimmunology. This is about the mind, this is about the brain, and this is about the body's immune system. Psychoneuroimmunology. It's the biomedical science that explores relationship between emotions, nervous system, and immune system. And this science, this research, which started only about 40 years ago, it's concerned with elucidating links between our states of mind and our states of health. It's very interesting. There is a direct causal link between the states of mind and our states of health. And anyone interested in exploring a lot more about this can read this book, two books, by Norman Cousins. He was one of those pioneers who started this department at UCLA, University College, University of California, Los Angeles School of Medicine. Anatomy of an Illness is one book. Okay? And the second one is Head First, it's called, Head First Biology. Anatomy of Illness and Head First Biology by Norman Cousins, two very famous books that he has written, where he summarizes his experience and also what all experiments they did with the other researchers in helping understand the power of mind on body and how that can be put to use for helping the patients. And this is the very well understood stress pathway. When you perceive something as threatening, okay? First, that threat is perceived in hypothalamus, which sends a signal to your brain through the nervous system, and the hormones released by the brain, they activate your adrenaline gland, which sits on top of kidneys, and those adrenaline glands are excited to release stress hormones. And what is the result? Increased blood pressure, heart rate, respiratory rate, perspiration, and the immune system is temporarily suppressed because your brain is sending a not okay signal to your body because you perceived a threat. All these help us to move away from the threat. You went to meet a friend of yours who has just come down from States, and as soon as you open the gate, there's a big Labrador dog which is not even tied. Okay? It's unleashed. And then it turns and then looks straight into your eyes. And then starts getting up. What would you do? Yeah? You would run faster than Usain Bolt. Because these changes, they take less than hundredth of a second to kick in once you perceive the threat. That's how fast body responds. Okay? So, if this is the stress pathway, that is why this mechanism or this system that is built inside our body is to help us from those survival threats. But today in the modern world, we seem to be switching on this system each time we see our boss. Each time we are given a new assignment. And we have no place to go. And that seems to pile up a lot of this stress and the corresponding lifestyle diseases that we seem to experience. Because the system that was meant for one thing is being switched on in an entirely different manner. We also have, corresponding to stress pathway, there is also the opposite, relaxation pathway. It's interesting how discoveries in science happen. Hans Selye was the guy who gave this name stress and then who worked on this in 1960s at Harvard. Around the same time, his colleague Herbert Benson started working on relaxation. And he coined this word relaxation response. Have you heard about that? That's how negative trumps positive. Even today's kids, when you ask, they were supposed to study, go to school and study. They feel stressed even for that. Okay, we get paid, we just go to office and work. That also stresses us. So this has become a part of common jargon. But we haven't heard about this. There is also a relaxation pathway. When you relax, like multiple times that you have done during these 2 or 3 days, it follows the same pathway. But this time, the nervous system releases endorphins. That's why you start feeling good. These are the feel-good chemicals that brain releases. And it decreases blood pressure, it decreases heart rate, your muscles get relaxed, okay, it reduces perspiration and immune system gets strengthened. Because when you relax, you are sending an all-okay signal to all the cells. Everything is fine, just relax. So you are sending an all-okay signal. So when you send a not okay signal, each time you do that, you are sending a die signal to the cell. When you are sending an all okay signal, you are sending a live signal to the cell. That's why periodic relaxation, periodic practice of meditation, it enhances the relaxation response of the body, which has all these positive impacts. That is the reason why doctors or anyone whom you hear nowadays, they talk about practicing few minutes of meditation. You know, this is the science behind it. Any questions so far? No. For placebos, I didn't say that. I was just showing you that one of the elements that plays very strongly in cancer on the negative side is the suppressed emotions, and one of the factors that helped cancer patients live longer and sometimes also get completely cured is their attitude towards life. It's very important that we take this message very, very carefully. This is not an all or nothing. This is more like understanding the capability of this wonderful instrument called mind that we control and how to harness its power. So it is always meditation supplementing or complementing medication. It is not about replacing it. Let me be very, very clear. You are no longer a passive participant. You are no longer a passive observer in your wellness or in your health. You are an active participant. You will see that. We have some more time, so I'll walk you through that. Yeah. Okay, and this relaxation response counters negative physiological effects of stress. Now you go back and then see why Bhanu was talking about or what the participants in that reflection session were sharing. Now you can connect the dots. By just spending a couple of minutes, even relaxing for 1 minute before the meeting and 1 minute after the meeting, that 1 minute relaxation elicits this relaxation response. And when you are relaxed, your brain works much better. That's how it impacts your behavior or your expectations through the brain and nervous system. They interact with your endocrine system and immune system. Endocrine system talks about what kind of hormones get released inside our body. Okay? So this is how that which is immaterial influences that which is material. That's the link. Mind, brain, body. That's the sequence. Now, this is another very interesting development. As I was saying, more and more discoveries are showing how we are more powerful than we think we are, how we control our own destiny moment by moment. So another new area where scientists have started working on is epigenetics. Epi means that which is above. So there are many, we were taught that genes, if they are present, that means you are going to get that characteristic or you are going to get that disease. my grandfather had, he got diabetes at 50. My father got diabetes at 50. Now I am 48. So I have only 2 years to enjoy. I might as well enjoy. Because by 50 anyway, that gene will get activated. No. Now what science is saying is, there are very, very few diseases which you can count on your fingers where there is a direct relationship between a single gene's mutation causing that particular disease. One of those is Huntington's disease. But many of the lifestyle diseases are caused by the complex interactions of multiple genes. And each gene has multiple switches on top of it. That's where this science, the study of those multiple switches on top of the genes which regulate the functioning of the gene is what we call as epigenetics. So what do we know from that? It is still an area that scientists are still learning, but what do we know until now? Genes predict probabilities, not certainties. Very, very important. It's probable. That does not mean it is 100%. Genes are turned on or off like a rheostat. Majority of genes are governed by beliefs and lifestyle choices. Genes change. What we think, what we eat, what we do have their impact. So it all boils down to, from all the areas, it comes down to what we think, what we eat, and how we live. And that's what seems to impact all the other areas of our life. And unfortunately, in the world around, that primary skill of becoming a better thinker is what we are never taught. How do I improve the quality of my thinking? Have you ever heard that kind of course given in your school or college or even as a part of your corporate programs where millions are spent? How do you become a better quality thinker? How do you improve the quality of your thinking? That's something I would encourage each one of you to continue to reflect even after you go down the mountain. So this is another area, this is another interesting book if you are interested in reading. The name of the book itself is Molecules of Emotion. It's written by Candace Pert. C-A-N-D-E-C-D-A-C-E, Candace Pert, P-E-R-T. Okay? How do our emotions impact health? So we all have positive emotions, neutral and negative emotions. Positive emotions release positive neuropeptides inside the brain. Negative emotions release negative neuropeptides. What are those? These are endorphins and these are stress chemicals. And positive neuropeptides release healing energy. Negative ones release harmful. And this results in health. This results in disease. So the human body is one of the most wonderful and the most complex chemical factories that you can see anywhere in the universe. It can produce both elixir, that is amrit, that is life-giving, and it can produce poisons, that is life-taking. Who has the switch? Who has the switch? I have the switch. Body is more like a tatasu machine. Brain is more like a tatasu machine. You think negative, it says tatasu. You think positive, it says tatasu. So you decide what you want to think. How do negative emotions impact disease? This is where what Suraj Bhai was talking about in the last 2 days comes. Aggression and hostility shut down activity in anterior cingulate and striatum, the two key areas of brain that control anger and fear. Even if you don't understand the parts of the brain, don't worry about it. Whoever is interested, drop me an email. I can share a lot more material. Okay? Cynicism is neurologically damaging because it literally kills neurons. Okay? Being a skeptic is different from being a cynic. Yeah? There's a difference. So cynicism is not good. Healthy skepticism is. It's good because you want to learn, you're questioning. Greed and selfishness lead to physical and mental health issues. It's a known and understood fact. Cynicism is whenever, take your example. You go to your friend and then you say, I had wonderful time in Mount Abu. I picked up so many things. Both the kayar, whether achieve you again. Let me see if you can really transform in the next 6 months. Then you tell me, then I will believe. That is cynic. Who always sees negative in any situation. Skeptic is somebody who listens to you and says, that's interesting. Can you share some of those? Can I explore? Can you give me some information so that I can also read? You see the difference? So the second guy is skeptical, but in a healthy way. He wants to know. He is not refuting you. He is respecting your experience. But the first guy is outright rejecting your experience. And world is filled with more cynics than healthy skeptics, unfortunately, even at workplace. Fear and anger interfere with memory storage and cognitive accuracy. We all know that. This is age-old wisdom. That's why we are said, when you are angry, don't respond. When you are happy, don't promise. And when you are sad, don't decide. Regardless of your age, gender or ethnicity, anger, cynicism, hostility and defensiveness will increase your risk of cardiovascular disease and cerebrovascular problems. This is related to brain, this is related to heart. And the other side of the coin, don't get disheartened. There's a better side. Compassion and strengthening of vagal tone. This is also proven. Vagal nerve is one of the longest nerves inside the body. It starts from the back of your brain and it innervates. It enters a lot of other organ systems including your heart. Okay? And the strength of that vagal nerve is what we call it as vagal tone. If the vagal tone becomes weak or it reduces in strength, that is the first sign that you might get an heart attack. You can foresee it much before the heart attack comes by measuring the vagal tone, one of the ways. And it has been found when you are compassionate, it strengthens the vagal tone. And one of the reasons why we keep encouraging to do that 1 minute meditation or 1 minute relaxation, deep breathing enhances the work of parasympathetic system. Parasympathetic system is that part of nervous system which relaxes you. Sympathetic nervous system is that part of nervous system that excites you. So this deep breathing, it relaxes you, and that relaxation increases the strength of vagal tone. That's why when you are continuously too angry or too anxious and that's become a part of your life, the probability of you ending up with cardiovascular problems increase. No. Tone means strength. Other adjective for tone is strength. Vagal tone is strength of vagal nerve. And there are now many organizations, many universities, many laboratories that are exploring the impact of positive emotions. There is a whole new field of positive psychology that started as early as 2000. You can go to University of Pennsylvania website, UPenn, positive psychology, you search, you get loads and loads of material on how positive emotions impact health or promote health. One of those is Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education at Stanford. So that's the URL if you're interested, ccare.stanford.edu. That does a lot of research on compassion and altruism. Forgiveness and reduction in stress levels. When you forgive, forgiveness is never about the other person. It's all about you. we usually say forgive and forget. You won't be able to forget if it is really traumatic. The idea is not about forgetting. The idea is not allowing the past experience to create sorrow in your present. That is forgiveness. You acknowledge, you accept that it has happened in the past, but you are powerful enough to forgive yourself instead of blaming yourself, so that the past pain does not interfere with your present. That's forgiveness. Fred Luskin is the guy who has been working in this area for more than 25 years, and he started this Stanford Forgiveness Project. You Google this, you'll get a lot more information. Charity and immune system strengthening. Another fascinating stuff. What they found was those people who do one act of charity every week, they have better immune system. One of that charity does not mean today I take my neighbor's kids because the lady's husband is not there, he's on tour, so I will take her kid. Let me see. Next week when my husband is not there, whether she will take my kid or not. That's not charity. Neki kar, darya mein dal. Any act counts as charity when you do not have any expectation in return. It's fascinating. You can fake anybody on earth except your own brain. Brain somehow seems to understand. So when you perform that one act of charity, that strengthens immune system. And you want to explore more, you can visit this Greater Good Science Center at University of California, Berkeley. Gratitude makes you happier and healthier. This is also a proven fact. That's why I was sharing with you of maintaining a gratitude journal. Three things on that day that you are thankful for. And for me, one of the first things that I'm thankful for at the end of each day is, thank you God, I'm still alive. We forget that. So positive activities and well-being laboratory at University of California, Riverside. That's another lab. There are more than 200 researchers all over the world working on many projects related to positive emotions as a part of this field of positive psychology. Loving kindness can physically change your brain and improve its health. Being loveful, being kind, and you want to explore more, you visit the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Richard Davidson is the guy who has been doing pioneering research for the last 4 decades in exploring the impact of meditation on brain and on health. So here in Brahmakumaris, every month on a third Saturday, you can make a note when you have time in your respective cities, you can stop by any of the Brahmakumaris centers. Every third Sunday from 6:30 to 7:30, we do what's called as international meditation. So what we do for that 1 hour is we spread this message of loving kindness to all the souls on the earth. Even if you don't know how to do it, what to think, I would encourage you to visit the local Brahmakumaris center. This month's third Sunday is over? Yesterday. You can visit next month, make a note, just sit there and feel the vibrations. So all of these, if you see, what you are doing to the other person is coming back many more times to you. Totally counterintuitive to the selfish culture that we seem to have developed in the world around. What you give gets magnified and comes back to you again. And what are benefits of positive emotions? Improved health, improved sense of well-being, what you feel about yourself, longevity, and of course greater quality of life. Okay? Shall we take a minute? So what I want you to do is sit straight, put your pen pencils aside, close your eyes, bring in front of you each of your family members, which includes your mother-in-law and son-in-law and daughter-in-law. and your boss and your colleagues one at a time, and with lots of love, bless them. Bless each one of them. May you be healthy. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. Gently open your eyes, wipe your eyes. How do you feel now? Feel good? Did it cost anything? Did you become poor by a few thousand rupees? Can you do this every day? There's another exercise. Hug yourself. Hug yourself. Very tightly. And with lots of love to yourself, say this to yourself: may I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be peaceful. Don't feel uncomfortable. You're just hugging yourself. Hug tightly. We don't have to wait for somebody else to hug us. We can hug ourselves. And I'll show you another clip that shows how thoughts can actually change the physical structure of the brain. Pascal Lyon is a researcher. He does research in this field of neuroplasticity. So he did an interesting experiment. He picked up two groups of students. For one group of students, he taught them piano for a few weeks. Okay? And while they were learning piano, he tried to scan their brains and then check, is this extra exercise that they are giving to their fingers, is it having any change in the structure of the brain, that part of the brain that processes signals from these fingers? Okay? Because the more you work, the more you exercise these, brain has to work longer. So it actually changes the structure of how brain works. Now, that's easier to understand if we understand that brain does change in response to activity. Okay? He took the second group of patients, students. What he did was, he said, you sit in front of piano. You're not going to touch the piano. You will only visualize with same amount of focus of you actually playing the piano. Fascinating. When he scanned their brains, he found that the second group of participants' brains also changed just by thinking alone. Let's see that.
While people have this notion that plasticity must be a good thing, it's a good thing that the brain can change because we can learn new things, and that's true. But if plasticity is an intrinsic property of the brain, it's neither good nor bad, it's just the way it is.
Rivero Pasqualiani is elegant, charismatic, warm, mellifluous, expressive. And whenever he does something, he radiates a very serious sense of playfulness.
Just going to start with a relatively low intensity so that you have a sense of what it feels like. I've done this enough that I have a sense of where your motor cortex is going to be. TMS stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. And it is a way to stimulate, to apply currents to specific parts of the brain, but without having to cut open the skin, crack open the bone.
What I want to do is bicep.
The bicep movement. That's sort of more your little finger. One of the things that we've learned from TMS is that we can use it to map the brain. We can use it to understand how brain activity related to behavior. We can also use it to modify the brain. We can use it, depending on the parameters of stimulation, to actually increase activity in a part of the brain or to suppress activity in a part of the brain. So I'm just going to target your language area that will give you a little feel of what it is like when people are trying to speak and can't because of a stroke in that area.
Go ahead. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It was getting tough. I was still slurring my speech.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I became interested in is the question of how do the maps change when you simply think of things? When you don't do anything other than thinking. We took normal subjects and we set them in front of a piano and asked them to learn to do a five-finger movement exercise. They just had to go from thumb to little finger, back to thumb, back to little finger at a given rate. And we found that over these 5 days of practice, the part of the brain that controls finger flexions got larger and larger and larger. But we had another group of subjects who simply sat in front of the piano and imagined themselves moving. And we made sure that they did not move, but simply mentally rehearsed the actions. What we found in them is that the brain changed in exactly the same way as in those that actually physically practiced. So the idea is that just thinking will change your brain. And what that ultimately means is that one needs to be careful with what one thinks.
This beautiful experiment complements the work of Nobel Prize-winning psychiatrist Eric Kandel, who showed that thinking actually turns on genes inside neurons to form new connections between brain cells. And this idea is further complemented by brain scans, which show that psychoanalytic, cognitive, and other psychotherapies also change the brain structure through the use of thought alone.
I think we're now learning that in fact, the brain is changing all the time. And so the challenge is to learn enough about it so that you can guide the changes.
Now you go back to the first slide I played. Human body is endowed with all the necessary infrastructure to help us grow both mentally and spiritually. And you saw what he was talking about. This clip is taken from a documentary. It's very interesting. I encourage you to watch. It's on YouTube. It's called The Brain That Changes Itself. The Brain That Changes Itself. It's about a 60 minutes documentary made by the guy whom you saw, the Norman Doidge. It talks about how our mind can change the brain physically and how brain changes itself in response to our actions, in response to our thoughts. And he explores various aspects of neuroplasticity. The brain that changes itself. Doidge, D-O-I-D-G-E. Norman Doidge, N-O-R-M-A-N-D-O-I-D-G-E. Okay, now let's explore a little bit about the science behind meditation. What does these few minutes of silence that we are encouraged here to do so many times a day do to our brain? and what are its results. Try reading this. Try. Okay. Read this. Yeah, you can read it aloud. You're able to see that? Which one was easier? This one or this one? Do you know that I haven't changed a single letter from this to this? Number of letters are exactly the same. What changed? So, introduction of space, what did it do to the amount of effort you spent? It increased clarity. It increased readability. Exactly the same text, but when you introduced space, it reduced the amount of effort you spent. That for you, brothers and sisters, is meditation. As simple as that. We haven't changed the letters. We are not going to change your boss. We are not going to change your home. You are not going to change your community. You are not going to change your job. But when you introduce those reflective spaces, the amount of energy you spend drastically drops down. Today, we seem to be living this life. That is why so much of unnecessary energy expenditure, when we could do this, we are doing this. And space, is it free or costly? So yesterday some brother was asking, if I introduce this space, will I become slower in IT industry? Now you decide. Is this better? Constantly worrying about projects and that interesting phrase, deadline. Or introducing reflective spaces, being able to sit back, think, and then respond. You make the choice. And what is the meaning of meditation? It comes from this Latin word called meditatio. And its verbal counterpart, meditare, it means to think, to contemplate, and to ponder. That's what meditation means. That's why we keep saying that sit back and think. Sit back and reflect. And how does meditation or this slow thinking impact the brain? Yesterday we saw that as a part of the sleep session, but I'll repeat here anyway. So when you are awake, normal and alert, when you are performing your task at your workplace, brain generates beta. When you are angry, it generates super beta, but that is beyond the chart, so I didn't put them here. When you are relaxed and calm in this kind of environment, brain is into alpha state. When you are deeply relaxed and you meditate and you are practicing mental imagery, brain gets into theta waves. Brain generates theta waves. When you are deeply asleep, from yesterday's conversation, when you enter the NREM sleep, non-rapid eye movement sleep, brain generates these very slow delta waves, which are about one wave per second, 1 to 3 hertz. And this is the most important phase of the sleep that replenishes and energizes us. Okay? So consciously, you can get into these two states, and with deep meditation practice, you can also get into delta state through practice of meditation. And what happens inside a meditating brain? Okay? So this part of the brain, what you're saying here is what we call as the prefrontal cortex, and this is the frontal lobe. When you meditate, the activity in this part of the brain goes down. That means when you think more, you engage this part of the brain more, you use more energy, and you exhaust yourself more easily. When you are relaxed, when you think less, this part of the brain works less, which conserves a lot of your energy. And that's what gives you this feeling of relaxation. This is parietal lobe, this part of the brain. This has an interesting function. You know where your hand ends, where the chair begins. Where your leg ends, where the floor begins. That means each one of us has a sense of our bodily self. We know where it starts, we know where it ends. For those people whose parietal lobe is damaged, that sense is damaged. They think that they can go through the wall because they can't experience where the bodily dimensions end and then the external world begins. When you meditate, in that meditative state, the activity in parietal lobe goes down. That's where you must have heard through when listening to some of the meditators that they become one with the nature. They become unlimited. They suddenly say, I feel liberated. We are all connected. When you listen to many of these meditation practitioners or gurus, they speak in this language as if they are not there in this body. How does that happen? It happens because the activity inside this part of the brain goes down when you deeply meditate. That means you move, you become, in the Brahma Kumaris language, what we call as bodiless. You are inside the body, but you don't feel it, or we call as ashariri sthiti. And we also heard a lot about meditation improving concentration or focus. And that's why we suggest to students, even for professionals, practice meditation if you want to improve concentration. How does that happen? Which change inside the brain is actually giving us that benefit? There is this little piece deep inside the brain, this organ called thalamus. Small piece. All the information that we experience through the sense organs is passed through thalamus before cortex registers it. If your cortex doesn't register it, you won't feel it. Take the example. Listen to the hissing sound of the fan. Are you able to hear? That was always there for more than an hour and a half that you have been around. That was going to your ears but was not being processed by your cortex because your attention was elsewhere. When you pay attention, that signal starts getting processed. So when you meditate, this part of the brain, the thalamus, it dials down its activity. What it means is, even though these signals are coming from the senses, you're not processing them. That's focus, right? That's concentration. Opposite of concentration is distraction. Distraction means paying attention to irrelevant sensory stimulus. When I stop paying attention to irrelevant sensory stimulus, my focus improves. And doctors also say if you are having high BP, you start practicing meditation so that it calms you down, relaxes. So this is the brain sentry, what we call as reticular formation. If it is overactive, then you become a lot more anxious. Meditation seems to dial down the activity even in this part of the brain. This part, this is from the parietal lobe. So when the activity in that lobe goes down, your sense of separation between your body and the world around you comes down drastically. You become one. That means this sense of body that we feel always, that feeling comes down. What happens is when you meditate, if you meditate right, you also relax. When you relax, you take more deep breathing. When you breathe deeply, more oxygen is supplied to the brain. It's as simple as that. Most of our problems that we face, most of the health problems, they start with this shallow breathing. because we don't give enough oxygen to the brain and body cells. We get very little oxygen. That's why we encourage to breathe deeply so that you get more oxygen and you don't feel exhausted that way because you're supplying more energy. Good. What are the benefits of meditation? Helps you stay in the now. Reduces self-centered me thoughts. Another fascinating benefit. Most of the mental illnesses, they are caused with wrong focus on self-centered me thoughts. When you move beyond those, which meditation helps you, to start thinking about the world around in a positive sense, your mind and brain start becoming more and more healthy. Meditation reduces self-centered me thoughts, and in Brahmakumaris, interestingly, we call this as had se behad. That's how we summarize in Brahmakumaris. Had ki buddhi se behad ki buddhi vano. Can strengthen brain circuits responsible for concentration and generating empathy. We just saw that. Can alter gene expression. So this experiment was done by Richard Davidson at University of Wisconsin. He picked up a bunch of people who were suffering from psoriasis. It's a very painful skin disease. Okay? Very painful. So they taught them this mindfulness meditation for a few weeks. And at the end of the course, they checked their inflammation-causing agents inside their body, because that's what causes a lot of pain, pain-causing chemicals inside. What they found was their experience of pain not only reduced, but the corresponding chemicals inside the body that increased this pain also came down. That happened because those pain-producing chemicals, pain-generating chemicals, the production of those pain-generating chemicals got dialed down because the corresponding genes got turned down. So that was one of the first experiments that clearly showed meditation can even impact your gene expression. And you go back and tie this with what we learned about epigenetics a few minutes ago. Increases gray matter, thicker cortical walls means slower aging. With age, a simple example is your hair starts becoming not thick but thin. The same thing happens inside the brain for our gray matter. And meditation has been found to increase that gray matter. That means slower aging. And a classic example of this is Dadi Janki. She's 102 years old, okay? And those of you who are in Chennai and Hyderabad, she is visiting us, both the cities, in the next few weeks. So she's just arrived, I guess, from London yesterday. She still tours a bunch of countries, even at the age of 102. It strengthens your immune system, and it can protect your telomeres. Telomeres are the caps at the end of your chromosomes. At the end of each chromosome, they're capped. They have a small cap called telomere. The longer they are, the longer is your life. So meditation has been found to extend those telomeres. Any questions so far? Good. Summary. Your awareness, thoughts, beliefs affect biological process, hence health. Persistent negative emotions, anger, mistrust, jealousy, bitterness, they bring disease. Constant positive emotions, love, peace, faith, hope, happiness, trust, they bolster health. I am both. And that's what I said. This is the most positive result and the scary result of the modern research. It shows I am both in charge and I am also responsible. Health, like destiny, is a matter of choice. It's not a matter of chance. Yes.
So
Super. So the question is, just so that if it didn't get recorded, is talking about this movie called Secret, where people say that you think about having a check of 1 lakh and you will get it. I wish. I'll give you a simple equation which I shared yesterday evening as a part of this session, which will clarify that. Visualization minus hard work is wishful thinking. You can visualize it, you can feel it, you can dream about it for 100 years, you will not get a check of 1 lakh. Forget about 1 lakh, not even 100 rupees. But visualization plus hard work is equal to success. If you want to use visualization as a substitute for hard work, it won't work. It's just a marketing ploy. Every day you go there, do window shopping, looking at the necklace, let me see which boyfriend or husband buys that necklace for you. Yeah. 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 Were you there for the last 1 hour, that for the last 90 minutes? Yeah. So you heard that, how it impacts. I also said that thought is a very powerful tool that has the power to generate that capability inside you. When he said that you practice this Swaman, what he meant was when you transform your thinking and you start making it more and more positive, your ability to perform that task which you were afraid of doing goes down. That means your fear comes down. When your fear comes down, you can put your 100% capability in achieving the result. Most of the times, it is we ourselves which withhold our own potential from being displayed. So when you practice that Swaman, that part of your mind which is taking away a portion of your energy with those questions and doubts is removed. Just with the practice of Swaman alone, if you remove the hard work, things won't work. So you have to have both. That's the precise thing. This practice in no way is a replacement for the actual work you need to do. Let's be very, very clear. It adds, it helps. No, in Raj Yoga we don't speak about pranayama at all. Yeah, we start with that because automatically if you calm down your thoughts, your breathing becomes more deeper. But we don't start with breathing here. That's why in the, most of the meditations, a lot of focus is on mind and improving the quality of your thoughts. And yes, you can club both because they complement each other. Raj Yoga doesn't forbid. One second. Because that's getting recorded.
Most of the things that we saw, the research was done by the doctors who are out of India. So Indian doctors are not encouraged to do any kind of research work, because I have seen that US, UK, German scientists, many things. So we are, what I think is Indian population, they encourage more, all the kids are educated, our parents, they encourage for education more than any of the parents in the world. So PhDs are done, Indian scientists are doing so good, but nothing is highlighted as such.
Very good question. So to be fair on both sides, there's a lot of good research that is also happening in India, within India, by the Indian scientists. One of the first scientists who did the research on neuroplasticity was Mrigang Kasur. He's from India. There are quite a few people. It is just that for whatever reason, we are not so good in popularizing it. And what's popular is what gets picked up faster. Yes.
इन्हीं की बात का जवाब दूंगी कि why only foreigners, Indians क्यों नहीं? ये मेरे घर की personal example है. मेरा भाई orthopedician है और वो meditation में बहुत देर से है. इस संस्था के साथ नहीं जुड़ा हुआ. वो सिस्टर शिवानी के थ्रू ही बस मेडिटेशन 2 घंटे 3 घंटे इन पार्ट्स अर्ली मॉर्निंग इन नून एट नाइट एंड 10 किलोमीटर्स वॉक अ डे 5 किलोमीटर्स मॉर्निंग 5 किलोमीटर्स इवनिंग एंड एट द एज ऑफ 60 एंड ही वॉज हैविंग एट द एज ऑफ 62 ही वॉज हैविंग बीपी सिंस लॉन्ग नाउ ही इज कंप्लीटली All right, no medicine at all. His blood pressure is perfect, normal.
Very good. Somebody else was raising their hand. Yeah.
Hi, Bala. I have one question. See, in Raj Yoga meditation, we used to follow meditation with commentary, meditation with music, meditation with some instrumental music, and sometimes meditation in complete silence. So what is the difference between these different types of meditation and what is more effective? And my second question is related to what is the difference between conscious mind and subconscious mind and how we can change our thinking patterns from conscious mind to subconscious mind.
Yeah, the first one I'll answer, it's much easier. When you are starting to meditate, when the external sounds have a possibility of disturbing, we tend to switch on music. Music is not an integral part of meditation. It's an aid that will help you to focus better. Songs. When you play the song, like some of the songs that you have heard here, both in the beginning or at the end of the meditation, they are so meaningful. When you hear them, they gently force your mind to start thinking in that direction because it's already playing, you're already receiving it. You don't have to do much effort. So this is the process where you begin. Same thing with commentary. If you can sit and think, fantastic, that's the best. There are no other external aids. But when you are trying to learn the process, these will help you. The second question about the conscious mind and subconscious mind, I'll give you another book. Sorry if you forgot the art of reading, but this is the easiest way I can share where you can get a lot more information. You can read the book by Power of Subconscious Mind by James Murphy. Okay? And any other material you are interested, you can drop me an email. There are specific practices in which you can do. In summary, there are 2 practices that help a lot in you influencing your subconscious mind. That is, one is writing. The second one is creative visualization. They directly impact your subconscious mind. Now how, please don't ask me because we don't have time. We'll explore that later. Yeah, one Hello. Second. He has been waiting for long.
You said visualization minus hard working
is
wishful thinking.
Correct.
So the whole seminar is all about that what we think and we are healing ourselves. So we are basically visualizing ourselves to be in a good state. So what's the hard working in this?
I was relating to that 1 lakh check and that necklace. These are 2 different things. When you are visualizing to get that necklace for which you are every day going in front of the shop, looking at it and visualizing it and not doing anything so that you can get that
check
necklace, you won't get it. It becomes wishful thinking. But this visualization, we are talking about consciously generating the positive thoughts such that brain and body can relax. That's the difference. Yeah. So here also, in this visualization also, here you are doing your hard work. You are stopping your negative thoughts. You are focusing. You see the difference? Because it, take another simple example. If you keep visualizing 80 marks in your report card in math subject and not spend a day in opening your math textbook, will you be ever be able to get, how much ever pure and wonderful and colorful your visualization is, will you be ever be able to get those 80 marks in maths? That's what I was referring to. Yes, sir. So the last question, because it's already 11. Yeah, drop me an email, I will share that. I've said that, I've already shared my email. Drop me an email and I'll share the slide deck, no problem. Let the good word spread. So some tips for health: change your awareness, make it more expansive, behad. Change your thoughts, let them be peaceful, happy and harmonious. You have seen why we should do that. Send messages of love to your body cells. Wash your food and drink. Label water with wonderful thoughts. Cook food with wonderful thoughts and drink and eat. Love and appreciation helps. Meditate. So these are some of the references if you folks are interested. bkbalakishore@gmail.com. So you want to take the earlier slide also? You can. Yeah. These will be uploaded on YouTube as early as tomorrow. If you search. Now this one will get uploaded by today evening. All the previous sessions have already been uploaded. Okay? Okay? So...
Yeah. Hi, Bala.
Yes.
Actually, my question is that when we do meditation, so when we do something and we listen to the song sometimes, we go inside the song, and when we do some work, we go inside the work and we never mind how much time is gone and how much thing is. So this is also one kind of meditation is, and meditation is that we just sit in the and the think about the God, and there is a or the part of meditation, I'm something from confused with it.
Good question. One definition of meditation or of yoga is karya kushalta. Meditation as a practice is helping you improve your attention, reduce your negative thoughts so that you can do whatever you are doing more effectively and efficiently. Okay, so when you are working and you are doing it in a focused manner, that is your meditation. But make sure that it doesn't exhaust you. Okay?
Do we have time for one more question?
Go ahead.
Okay. As we learn that when we try to do meditation, consciously we have to slow down the breathing. Now, there's a question that is I'm asking for my wife. What she experiences is when she tries to meditate, her breathing goes faster. So what could be the reason for that and how to turn back the other way?
In the beginning, when your attention is to slow down, that anxiety makes it more faster. That's absolutely normal. In the beginning, when you try to meditate and when you try to relax, you will get more negative thoughts, more waste thoughts than normal. That is also normal. Absolutely fine. Most people, after they try out a few times initially, they get so irritated and vexed with these waste thoughts. Each time they sit, they seem to be coming more than before. They give up. Don't do that. Don't do that. The simplest way that you can do is sit down, and I'll give you a simple visualization which you can use, and this requires work. Visualize your mind as a stage. As a stage. And every thought that is coming in as an actor on the stage. Don't react to that actor. Some actors come, they smile, they go away. Some actors come, they crib, and they stay there. Some actors come, they laugh, they dance, and they go away. Some actors just come and then stay there. You are the director. Just observe them without reacting. The mere act of observing the thoughts and allowing them to flow will slow down their speed. So don't be anxious. Just sit down and then tell yourself even before you start, it is okay if my thoughts don't slow down immediately. It is okay if my breathing speed is going to increase. The minute you give permission to yourself, your mind relaxes. Because now there is no expectation. And this needs practice. So the more positively you do that self-talk and then be self-compassionate and say, you are just starting. For all these years, maybe 40 years, 50 years, you never tried. Gaadi chalti rahi, chalti rahi, chalti rahi. Now you want to change the direction. Thoda to time lagega. So let's be self-compassionate. And then keep telling yourself, then gradually but surely, things will change. Not only you, even I experienced, every single person in Brahmakumaris has gone through those initial stages. So there was time, as soon as red light is switched on, where I used to fall asleep. Literally. That's fine. So it's a journey. Okay? And you must have read this. This is something very, very useful for us to take from here. May I find the serenity of mind to accept the things about myself that can't be changed, the strength to change the things that can be changed, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay? Good. Thank you very much. That's all I have for today. And have a safe trip. Good. So can we end this session with a minute's meditation? Yeah. Just sit back. Relax. So we'll try with complete silence this time. Even I will not give any instructions. Is that okay? Let's do that.